is now 5 o'clock. I am going to go ahead and call our Columbia City Council pre-council for a June 20th to order. Thank you. And I, first up, we have the strategic plan. So Carol, I see you, so I assume you were leading this conversation.
I am. All right. So, good evening, Mayor and members of the council. Thank you for allowing us to present on the strategic plan this evening. We have four objectives that we'd like to cover. First, we'd like to provide you with a brief overview of the strategic planning process, how the plan aligns with the budget. You will hear updates from the priority team leads, and then we'll talk a little bit about what's next. So in regard to the current plan overview, development of the strategic plan started in late 2018-19. With significant input from the council and staff. That included 65 frontline city employees. And the goal of this approach was to develop the plan from the ground up and promote an environment of shared decision making and increased employee engagement. This was a process improvement from previous strategic planning processes. In addition, we had 8 focus groups totaling 138 participants. Those were held to encourage public engagement with our stakeholder groups, and we identified our stakeholder groups as youth, businesses, low income, seniors, persons with disabilities, and then 3 groups for the public at large. So the council adopted the strategic plan in July of 2021 via policy resolution, and it included 5 strategic priority areas: organizational excellence, safe neighborhoods, reliable infrastructure, inclusive community, and resilient economy. And these are basically the high-level buckets through which we organize our work and guide the city's decision-making as we strive to provide the best possible service to the community. So we are currently in the implementation phase of the planning process, whereby we have aligned the budget, the city's budget, with the strategic plan. And this, again, is a significant process improvement from the previous 2 strategic planning processes. We'll review again. We reviewed this at the retreat, but I want to restate the vision statement. Columbia is the best place for everyone to live, work, learn, and play. This was not changed from the previous strategic plan, so it remains constant. The mission statement was changed slightly. We insert the word equitably, so to serve the public equitably through democratic, transparent, and efficient government. 6 core values are outlined in the strategic plan, and these core values guide our organization. They shape our identity and create the roadmap for the strategic plan. Those include service, communication, continuous improvement, integrity, teamwork, and equity. And with that, Stacy is going to talk about the strategic plan and budget alignment.
Hi, I'm Stacy Weideman. I'm a senior budget analyst in the finance department. Over the past few years, we've started becoming a lot more intentional with showcasing how departments, how their work aligns with our strategic plan. If you go back to the fiscal year 22 budget, that's was really kind of a first big push. Some department pages, you'll see a strategic plan alignment section. In all of them, you should see some information about how the department fits within the plan. For the fiscal year 23 budget, we kind of leveled that up a little bit more. We added a strategic plan alignment section for each department page, along with a climate action and adaptation plan, or CAP, alignment section. So if you open our fiscal year 23 budget to any department page, you'll find out more information about how that department fits within the plan. So we're continuing to do that with the FY24 budget. We'll talk a little bit more about this during the budget work session that's coming up next month. This is just something that we're going to be continuing to build on year to year. So with that, we'll go into some updates from our teams, starting with our organizational excellence team. For all of these, you'll see the original wording as well as the revision that's been made, so you can kind of see the difference. But with that, I'll turn it over to Kathy.
Hi, Kathy Baker with Human Resources. resources. I have the privilege of being the co-chair for organizational excellence. The better half of my team, Megan McConaughey, happens to be at a work conference, so I'm going to try to do my best to get through all of this without my great co-chair with me. I have the privilege at the council retreat to focus on organizational excellence with Mayor was at our table. We had a lot of good conversation and good work, and as a result of that, have recommended the change that is seen up there. And the purpose of this change is to expand beyond workforce and to be inclusive of the city council within organizational excellence. And some of the items we talked about related to that is having an effective and efficient council meetings, creating an onboarding handbook for city council and accessible local government. So we're looking to expand. These are the five outcome objectives for organizational excellence. I will not read those to you, but you can see them. But we did make a small change on the last one, and it's in red, and that was a result of our conversation at the council retreat, that we want to make sure that not only were we using our resources wisely, but also ethically. Next slide. Some of the highlights and progress so far for organizational excellence, one of the big items is the ongoing class and comp study. And we are looking forward to producing recommendations on pay ranges for the city council as part of the FY24 budget. We are also have an RFP that just closed to hire a consultant to help with an employment engagement survey. So we hope to have that survey issued in FY24. And then we did conduct our annual benefits survey, which our employees indicated 76% that our benefits meet their needs, and 71.5% agreed that we have a competitive benefits package. So we thought that was good information. Next slide, please. We have staff that are working on developing an organizational culture survey. We plan to do that in-house. The new chatbot system implementation for the contact center is anticipated to be implemented by the end of this fiscal year. We have an email expansion committee that has been working on getting all permanent employees a city email address, and we've made very good progress with that with the help of the IT department. And we also conducted a wellness fair to educate employees about all of our available benefits. And it was very well attended, and we received very good survey responses from employees that said it was beneficial. Yes.
About email, are employees currently, when they need to email a supervisor or whatever, they are using a personal address at this point, I guess.
If they do not have a city email address, that would be correct.
There are some that are, that's true, which is a problem for everyone.
That is correct. Okay. We started with our bus drivers and implemented the email expansion to our bus drivers. There's been great operations, and we just finished the street department, and then we're going to be moving on to parks and parks. So we are making good progress. The utilities department.
I'm Lee Kotwitz. I'm the Neighborhood Services Manager, and I co-chair Save Community with Stephanie Browning from the Health Department. And start off with the revision. I really appreciate the work that was done at the retreat. This is similar. I think this is better. It reflects, again, the work of our area. So thank you all for your time to make those changes. There were no changes to our core objectives. These are going to be familiar with a lot of you as we go through our work. You're going to see things that are familiar to you, but it doesn't look like any edits were made at the retreat. So we'll move on. And I share some highlights. So one of our objectives is to increase trust. And as you might imagine, that is difficult. That's difficult to measure. But how do we do that? It's, especially with the police department, it is making connection with our residents. And so you'll see a couple items up there related to that. One is the return of the Citizens Police Academy, and that starts this week. And then also, we wanted to document all of the work CPD is doing in outreach to the community. Meeting with the community at events, but also in regular ongoing meetings. We also have a couple of items that are in the hands of our purchasing division. One is to purchase a new RMS system with the police department. This will help them manage data and information and be more effective in their work. And then also, we have received proposals for the co-responder efforts. That will be a partnership with our health department and the police department, and other city divisions will be a part of that as well. And staff is going to be reviewing those proposals. And we did have vendors that want to do that work, which is good because we had difficulty hiring anyone to be able to perform that work with the police department. This next slide, these are all things that are very familiar to you all. They're things that you're knowledgeable of, the work that we've done, but it's worth acknowledging. The city's purchased the Ashland Street Center, expanded services. Many are provided through that facility. We've added an additional staff member through a public health and human services, that social services specialist. And that person has been very effective in helping our police, fire, neighborhood services really help those high users, folks that maybe need some additional social services or mental health assistance. And so that person has been put right to work with that. There's been additional funds for utility assistance and then work to expand our fire stations and their services. And finally, again, some things you might be familiar with, but the city did receive a grant for Safe Streets and Roads for All. This will help with Vision Zero and hopefully to reduce our fatalities. As part of that, there is more cooperation between Public Works and Public Health and thinking and discussing how our unsheltered population is affected by those road deaths and how they can work together on that topic. And then we continue to track our closure of cases in our office, Neighborhood Services, but also the Fire Marshal's Office and Environmental Health, and then also doing some tracking and getting some feedback about how we can make sure that the customer has high satisfaction with their services as well.
Okay, I'm Carrie Auerbach. I'm with Public Health and Human Services, and I get to co-lead with Stephanie Brown. I'm very lucky. And you can see the revised statement here is to cultivate a community focusing on equitable access, inclusive engagement, and equal opportunity and treatment for all. Inclusive and equitable community, sorry, and equitable was also added. So these are our three goal statements, and those haven't changed, so they should be for longer. And then some of the highlights we have that we're excited to announce.
So the city did hire our very first diversity, equity, and inclusion officer in early May. That person is currently working on several projects within the city, as well as analyzing different departments and working with department heads and other employees. One of the main projects he's helping with is working on some internal training for our equity definition and making sure our city leadership understands what equity is and how they can look through that lens when they're thinking about policy making and things like that. Our communications and creative services team is working with purchasing to have a live captioning RFP to come out soon. This will enhance our options for in virtual meetings as well as open more community engagement for our community. We looked at our website to make sure it was more accessible, to make sure it is ADA compliant. The communication and creative services manager did work with IT and make sure that several of our web pages are accessible, as well as he did an assessment with department heads to look at some of the documents that are currently on our website to make sure they are ADA compliant.
The city launched its first Civic Academy with the help of Stacy here. This program provides residents with an opportunity to learn more about their local government and the services we provide, and we've gotten some really fun, great feedback from that. We're also expanding multilingual services, and Stephanie and her team worked on an RFP for language services. Shared eligibility across the new programs is being solidified, and we actually have a social services specialist that works downtown down here in the mezzanine. And then a media campaign is also budgeted for this fiscal year based on that. And then diverse board and commission representation is a priority. Sheila and her team have helped us with getting the data regularly. So we have a demographic survey, and we can see that right now 70% of board members and commissioners have filled out that paperwork, and data has been entered, and that shows up that 17% Black, Indigenous, people of color. That out of all of our commissioners, 17% are Black, Indigenous, people of color. And specifically, Sheila's team helped us make sure that we didn't have duplicates if they were serving on more than one board. And also, we are not counting anybody who's not city council appointed. So if the university appoints someone, that doesn't necessarily count. And then 18% matches our demographics here in the city of Columbia. So we're very, very close, and that is our goal. And then something that wasn't on the slides, I somehow missed it, I think, was that also downtown we have someone who is coordinating with our public safety for our high utilizers, and that was an action item that we had under inclusive communities. So.
Good evening. I'm Amy Schneider. I'm the director of the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and my partner in crime is Bernie Andrews, who's the assistant director of economic development. And I'm so proud to have this microphone. I told you I was going to say that. So we're really pleased with the work that was done at the City Council retreat on the revised statement. TZ should remember, and it makes more sense. So thank you to all who helped us do that revised statement. Resilient economy has four outcome objectives. And we talk about the outcome objectives at the council retreat. I don't think I need to read them to you, but they cover a lot of ground.
So under the outcome of foster a more diverse business economy, we have exceeded our goal of increasing the number of minority and women-owned business enterprises that work out the Ready Hub. Our goal is to have a total of 54 by the end of 2024. As you see up there is May 30th, there are 99 MWEs right now. Interestingly, there are 33 are minority men owned, 33 are minority women owned, and 33 are non-minority women owned. So that's equity, I would say. Part-time refugee entrepreneurship coordinator was hired in FY23. Kind of rebranded, you see the programming that they'll be doing up there. That's rebranded as the Global Entrepreneurs Program, and that's the work of Valerie Berta. I think some of you probably know Valerie. She's been initially focusing on the Afghan and Latino populations, working on translation of materials and setting up events, and really just trying to build trust in those populations right now. She's doing it. And the next slide. Last thing I'll mention is the Sharps. The Shops at Sharp End is going to be launched later this year. That's going to be a minority business retail incubator. That's going to be at 500 Small Rock across from the post office in a space that was most recently the Como Cook's temporary location. So this will be a physical space for retail and also the programming that you see up there. This is a partnership between Ready, Downtown CID, and Central Missouri Community Action. So I think the goal is to try and have that facility open by September is the
current one of the things this particular priority has to depend on is great partnerships with departments throughout the city. A lot of the things that are being asked cannot be done without the departments that actually head these things up. For instance, as we look at affordable housing and expanding the supply, we now have our community development has sent out RFPs for citywide comprehensive plan update and the Metropolitan Transportation Plan. So thank you to them for being great partners in working on this. And then Public Works is already underway with a transit study. This should help increase the total fixed route ridership by 10% from 2019 levels. Vendor has been selected, but the contract has yet to be awarded. Another thing that we highlighted underneath this priority was accessibility of external data. Bernie does a great job of each month going to the strategic plan website and updating data on that website, which includes unemployment data,
foreclosures, hotel occupancy, and UPOP enrollment, a few other things that are on there each month.
All of those data points that show kind of how the temperature of how our community is doing. The Convention and Visitors Bureau does a biannual visitor guide that also goes underneath the accessible data, and that has been completed and printed, and it is being dispersed throughout the city as well as throughout Interstate 70 and other cities around the state.
I have the Library Stable Infrastructure in Saratoga, Assistant Director of Utilities, and my co-lead. It was reliable infrastructure, but it was changed at the retreat to reliable and sustainable infrastructure. Reliable, sustainable, and innovative infrastructure with the efficient delivery of municipal services to meet the current and future needs of our community. There are three outcome objectives for reliable and sustainable infrastructure that are going to change the conditions of our towns. One of the performance measurements under reliable infrastructure is pacer rating for our city streets to take it from 6.7 to an average of 7 plus by 2032. The current annual budget for that in fiscal year 23 was just over 6.3 million, and to be at a 7 plus it needed to be at 6.8, just right under 6.8 million in 23, so we're about half a million shy of that, which was fine. Because I want to make a note, in FY21, I believe is the first year, there was $2 million of airport transportation sales tax that was redirected to the street division when airport received CARES money. So that was able to fund and get the road projects, paving, mill and overlay, that helped the funding that they were needing on the street side for the last 3 years. With FY24, that money gets reallocated back to transportation sales tax, so the street division loses that. And what has been proposed in the budget for 24 is an additional $1.5 million from the new use tax going to cover part of that money that was being reallocated. So that shows that we'll be just a little over a million short of where we need to be to take our streets up to the 7+ on the pacer rating. So the line item, additional funding needed in red, that's the additional funds that are needed to keep us on the pace that we need to be to meet this goal in the strategic plan. So by the end of 27, we're just under $1.3 million below where we should be funding-wise. So that kind of gives you an idea where we're needing additional money to meet this measurement.
Sarah, quick clarification.
Yes.
On that, so the 5.8 does include that 1.5 million proposed,
yes,
from the use tax? Okay, thank
yes,
you.
Yes, it does. So we're half a million less than
yep.
we were with the 2 million.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Several of these, just I won't read through every one of them, but integrated electric master plan, our management plan, it's currently being implemented, the wastewater and stormwater, the electric resource plan, master plan, we received some direction from council, so we're moving on it. The water master plan was funded in 22, it's currently being worked on, we anticipate it being completed in the fall of 23, and annual 1% of existing infrastructure, we include in our CIP and our operating budgets to maintain our current infrastructure, so those should already be included in our budgets. Metropolitan Transportation Plan, Citywide Comp Plan. Amy mentioned this is part of a resilient economy, but so it's kind of flowing over to the plan areas. We we've replaced a, we're currently replacing a monitoring system in our lift station. It's in the sewer. It's budgeted in 23. We're currently negotiating a contract with the vendor on that. And we are currently looking to overhaul and modify our Columbia Energy Center number 4. Currently, it does not, we're not able to use it in the winter months. So we're looking at overhauling and modifying it for winter 24 so we're able to use it in the winter when we're not really able to use it. Parks and Rec. Most of everything Parks and Rec that's in the strategic plan was covered in the last sales tax issue that went forward in 21. So Parks and Rec is implementing pretty much everything. Additional money is needed, I guess I should say. Same thing, this is just Parks and Rec. All of our funding is either in their operating budget or is identified in their CIP with the ballot. Streets and sidewalks, or sidewalks, construct at least one sidewalk project each year following the sidewalk master plan. Funding has been budgeted by Public Works in their CIP, and the same goes for installing and reconstructing at least 25 programs per year within. Same thing for Parks and Rec. This is the Recreation and Open Space Master Plan. They are implementing Neighborhood Park Master Plan. They put funding in their CIP, and they're doing areas like the White Gate Neighborhood, where a park currently doesn't exist. And then the Trails Master Plan is being funded through their park sales tax. Resident Satisfaction and Citizen Survey. So the strategic plan outlined they wanted to see increases of 2% for our parks, trails, and recreation, 3% on streets and sidewalk maintenance and new sidewalk construction, and an increase in solid waste and recycling, 3%, sewer 3%, and water and electric 3%. We budgeted for this money in FY22. We carried it over. The RFP for that just closed on Friday, so we will be in negotiations, interviews and negotiations on a contract, and hopefully we'll have a contract in place. It's part of the employee engagement survey as well. That was all kind of the same RFP. So we're hoping to have all those funds in place before FY24. And then maintaining urban tree canopy percentage, planting a minimum of 200 new trees. Funding has been put in Parks and Rec operating budget for that each year. And increasing electricity from renewable energy sources 10% based on the cap by 2035. We are currently undergoing a study with the Energy Authority. You may remember this that came to council. Well, hopefully this will be presented at July 10th Water and Light Advisory Board meeting. So we should be bringing something forward to council not long after that goes to them on their results. And then collaboration with the Columbia Housing Authority to provide and install solar panels for low-income housing development. We budgeted for this in FY23, and an agreement's currently, I think the agreement is still illegal, I believe. I anticipate taking this, bringing this forward to you all sometime later this summer. Oh, increasing the current ratio of 11.5 acres of natural areas with diverse habitats. Parks and Rec has included that as part of our sales tax that was renewed in 2021. And that budget has been budgeted.
Okay, and so now it's time to talk about next steps. We would, staff would really like to increase our reporting to council on the strategic plan. Projects that are included in the plan and new decision items. We would also like to increase the employee engagement with our employees so that they can identify themselves in the strategic plan. They know where they fit. And then Stacy mentioned the alignment with the budget. We want to be more intentional about aligning the strategic plan priorities with the FY24 budget. And then finally, what you saw tonight, we would like to bring back to council an amendment to the policy resolution that would adopt the changes that were discussed this evening. And we are happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from council or staff? Nick?
On the, I don't know what they're called actually, but in each of these areas, there's a statement that defines it.
Goal statements,
and we worked on those at the retreat. It's been noted a couple of times. Has that gone back to the committees that have been working on this for their review as well? Or are they just happy with whatever we do?
Most of us. So we have quarterly meetings with our whole team, so we have not had a meeting since the council retreat yet to discuss the changes for organizational excellence. I can't speak for
I would just be curious in their input. I mean, they're the ones who are focusing on this primarily, so.
We can send it back to the committee for their feedback.
Before it comes to council.
Yeah.
Council.
Yeah.
I have several others.
Yes,
can you remind me, us, there's $600,000 in FY23 for assistance with utilities. What was that amount beforehand?
It was previously 300.
Yeah.
Then we went through the 300.
So total 600 over the course of the okay. I guess I'm personally curious, the shared eligibility, where is that? And that'll be citywide, right?
Yeah. Human services and social services specialists take care of the departments. You know, transit is still free, rides are still free. So right now, that's probably the best recommendation. It's obviously the right. But the goal would be that if you come in for a scholarship,
Claire. Be available in October of this year or soon.
I am hopeful October.
Okay.
And
because that was one of my questions. So when Nick's asking it, I'm like, great. But I'm like, when does that start?
Nick has a long list of questions. So does anyone have else before I keep them due? I just have one you mentioned on this for the increased reporting to council. What do you envision that looks like? Because like I know like at the retreat, it was a very engaged as far as like updating and getting direction from us. Do you view it as being just kind of report outs? What sort of feedback, you know what I mean? Like, I want to make it a useful report and not just like, here's our quick update and then I forget about you for 3 months. I will never forget about you, but you know what I mean.
I guess, what would council like to see?
It's a question for us.
I mean, my dream is a dashboard with
metrics,
widgets, and metrics, but.
So there is a dashboard.
Like stoplight.
Not everything is measured.
But not everything is measured on it. So, we do have a dashboard that probably needs to be refreshed, so we can take a look at that.
I would sort of like to hear every 3 months. I mean, this has only been a half an hour report so far. So, you know, if we could do that every 3 months, at least for the next year, and then see, do we want to continue that, or are people comfortable that...
Till the next council retreat.
Yeah, until the next council retreat. There you go.
I'd say the one thing is you know, you'll find quickly that we get into another pre-council. I mean, like, you're right, there's only two pre-councils a month. And so if every other one is a strategic plan update based on our pre-councils, I know that you guys, I'll be honest, they've asked to do some things. So it's like thinking about, is it on a council meeting? Is it also just something that they send out to us, which it might be easier to find a scheduling. So maybe it's kind of like a six-month check-in with the update, but also just sending us updates on whatever metrics or big key areas are coming forward. That's at least my thought.
Well, the other thought that I just had was have them send out their updates via email or whatever, but then once a quarter, we set for the pre-council 15, 20 minutes for Q&A, just simply Q&A. Anybody got questions, right after you send out your update, so that we can bring them, not take the time up to go through it.
Assuming you all read your stuff.
there any doubt?
Right. Nick.
Just two.
Okay.
But the shops at Sharp End, I'm really excited about that. How will retailers be identified for that?
I think I'll defer that one to Stacy, who's been involved in planning that. Stacy,
I didn't hear the question.
How will the retailers at the shops at Sharp End be identified?
So we right now are culling our list of clients between the Reynolds Business Center, Raised Minority Business Program, obviously clients of the Hub, as well as Valerie's clients. And then any other referrals will certainly welcome. And so we're going to be doing a lot of outreach to reach new potential startups for the recent program. But right now we're starting with the list of clients that we have already.
And just one other thing, the new comprehensive plan, we have an idea, thanks, Stacey. We have an idea about what the timing is on that.
Tim Teddy?
Yes.
No, we don't, because of our staffing mainly. We don't have enough hands right now to get it started. We have drafted the RFP and circulated that for comment. We are a little more focused on the metropolitan
any other questions?
Yes, I do have one.
Yeah.
The co-responder program's been on there before, and so we've had updates on it. So I'm curious of what the holdup has been, what the feedback you're receiving on its existence and one application in the proposal.
Well, one, very hard program. Yeah. But we never could get staff hired. We go months without an applicant, and we just never had to apply. So this is our last ditch effort. See, somebody would be. Okay. Any other questions from council? Yeah. No, appreciate it. So, yeah, I think once you hear feedback from the committees, except to see, yeah, policy resolution updating it. Okay. And then if you wouldn't mind, we have a lot of new council members, so if the dashboard, I mean, I know it, maybe it's not as updated, but whatever is updated on the dashboard, maybe some reminding council and sending out that link
okay.
would be appreciated. Yeah. I was like, I can't remember. All right. Do you need any other feedback?
I think I'm good. Great.
Appreciate
Thank
this.
Your time.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Yeah. All right, up next, I believe this is a finance show. Matthew Liu talking to us about pension
Jim coming in.
And more people. I'm trying not to fall asleep in any section.
Okay. Maybe don't announce that out loud.
What? I mean, like, we have to help them set that up. But I asked, do you need any feedback from us? And he's like, no. I was like, I'll try to give you that feedback.
Your last emoji. Sometimes I can see it.
I do the one. I felt my opinion. So I had to do something that last.
Oh.
So
wait,
I
you
either
you, squishy balls? That's
what I do. So I either doodle and listen, or I look and I like, if I'm looking like, oh, that change was the plan. So I'm always doing two things.
So my daughter, she gets like a kind of nervous when she starts doing this, and then all of a sudden I'll start, like, I'll notice that she's like,
she cookies.
Because I'm like, grab your squishy ball, like, grab your, you know what I mean? Because she needs to be like trying to get her attention. Yeah, yeah.
Talk
to
them about the same subject.
Yes,
Doctor.
Yes.
So working on this onboarding handbook of new council members, suggestion that an old head kind of be a mentor.
Yes. 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 That's a good point. Yeah.
We still learn.
Yeah, right?
Half of us are still learning.
Right.
I even asked Betsy that. She said, I'm still learning. And she's been at it for almost 8-9 years.
Right. I know that. But just, I mean, just
yeah.
some of the generalities, like, all the emails we've been getting about
saying
we're trying to change vote. Do we respond to each other? Or do you just put them in a folder?
That's normal.
Less red.
Yeah.
How do you handle vote? You know, we had the other one, you know, about the
cloud.
Does it feel any different?
Yeah.
You got it?
No, I'm just saying it looked much better.
I mean,
like, okay.
Well, are you asking now?
No. He's saying in the handbook, putting in those best practices.
That would be something, you know, again,
okay.
For the mentor.
Any update on getting some of that?
Here's what I find is useful. Yeah.
A suggestion.
Oh, that's right. You said that, right? Because you had to wait for a question.
It was
fully healed.
I didn't know if it was like.
And that's what we'll do, like,
when they were talking about
do it all in one shot.
Oh, that's right. Because you have
to sell a lot of people.
Yeah.
But they come back.
Yeah. That's gonna be cool.
It took 7 hours.
I don't want to.
I think it's good. And that's the
question.
Yeah, no, I appreciate
it. Assume I know
nothing. A lot of times when they're creating the plan,
you don't
they
know
try to not put something in there that they can't compare.
That's a double
okay.
Negative.
I know very little. Assume I know very little.
You know what I mean? Is it number of community
don't
events?
Be afraid to.
The community host? Is it? There
I don't care.
I know something like the number of responses.
Just let me know. I appreciate it.
But I was going to say, the other thing is that can you measure? Because you know what I mean? Like, they're reliant on a community group.
Well,
I know. So, kind of like my thought from there was like, okay, we rely on
Saturday. No, you're not, but I tried to
do
that.
I'm
the mean.
Of course, survey.
Great. I mean, now I got to start keeping track of votes.
I don't think I really understood this at the point. Because, like,
But I also, I've seen that, and they still want to allow them.
Do you have a recommendation as to which one would be better?
He has to do everything on his own. So we have police and fire board and all of that. No, they just won't let him travel still. Yeah, they kind of cut that part out.
Okay.
Yeah, there he is.
Okay.
Nita, can you hear us?
Awesome. Movement on what?
Okay. I'm debating.
Like, yeah, but he's low.
I don't think I'm going to have the time at work to take off to this vote. But since you recommend
it. Folks in MML are very.
Depends on if I have anything going on. Or
capable about things in
Missouri.
There's a meeting that they do.
Anybody, so that's a good one.
Yeah.
All right, are you guys ready?
Way to get him a little louder.
That I think is really
small. Oh, yeah?
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
But I've heard that their annual meeting is better. More than I've heard it's better. But.
Now we think it's the Kansas City meeting.
Yeah.
Thanks.
MML's annual meeting.
MML versus NLC versus both.
The National League of Cities. So awesome,
right. Since I'm not going to Madison.
They wanted my morning as well.
Because
I assume.
Me neither. Thank you.
So where do
you hear that from? I don't know if you're very low,
though.
I still owe you an email about trying to set up a
regular. Hey, Nita, can you come on again and just talk? And you sound really quiet right now.
Sure. Hello now.
You sound good. Everybody hear him all right?
Yep. Hey, is there an echo?
Talk one more time, Nita.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
We sound good. Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'm assuming James, you'll bring up the presentation.
I will do that. Yes. I'll have. I guess if you're ready to start.
We're ready to start. Yep.
So we got you guys.
Introduce
here.
Yourself, Jim.
I'm Jim McDonald. I'm the assistant finance director for the city. And we kind of wanted to get in front of you guys. A lot of you are new members, and you probably haven't seen an actuarial report before. So we have Mita Drozdilov, who is from GRS. He's our actuary. and we have Mark Shigowski from UBS. He is our investment manager. And we're kind of going to go over the police and fire actuary report. The 22 one just got released last month. So Mita's going to kind of go over that. And then Mark's going to kind of go over the investment portfolio and kind of how we're going about trying to cover our obligations to our pensioners. So Mita, I'm going to pull up your presentation. I'll share the screen and then we'll get started here.
Thank you, James. Well, while James is doing that, let me just say good evening to everyone. As James mentioned, my name is Mita Draslov. I'm with Gabriel Roeder Smith & Company. We are the actuaries for the City of Columbia Police and Fire Retirement Fund. I really appreciate the opportunity to present to you this evening. I think James mentioned that you haven't heard an actuarial valuation presentation. Many of you haven't. Hopefully you will want to hear another one after mine, so I will do my best for that. So James, if we can go to the next slide, if you don't mind. Thank you. So as James mentioned, we released the September 30th, 2022 actuarial valuation of the Police and Firemen Retirement Fund. And there's two main reasons we perform the annual actuarial evaluation. One is to determine the employer contribution rate to fund the system. And the contribution rates, there's one developed for the police portion of the system and one developed for the fire portion of the system. And the contributions that we computed as of September 30th, 2022, are for the budget year, fiscal year, ending September 30th, 2024. So that's one of the main reasons we performed the valuation. The second is to measure what we call the funding progress in relation to the actuarial cost method. And it's just basically a fancy way of saying what portion of the liabilities of the system that our police and firefighters have earned as of September 30th, 2022, based upon the service that they've accrued as of that time, what portion of those liabilities are covered by system assets? And what we're going to see later on is that there's a pretty significant difference between the liabilities that have been accrued versus the assets of the system. We can go to the next slide, James. So there's, for public employee retirement systems, there's two ways of sort of, or two sort of philosophies on how to finance a public employee retirement system. One is that increasing green line, that cash benefits line, and that's basically sort of how Social Security finances its retirement system. So early on, you know, I think Social Security got introduced in the mid-30s, and when there were very few retirees drawing benefits, there weren't much contributions coming into the system. And as time has progressed and cash benefits have increased because the number of retirees in Social Security has increased, the contributions required to come into the system have increased substantially. The other philosophy is that sort of level dotted blue line. And that's called level contribution financing. And basically what is trying to be achieved there is that a retirement system is trying to receive contributions for an active member in the system as a level percentage of payroll, so that if they receive those contributions from the time an active member first gets hired to the time that they go into retirement status, that the system, if all of the actuarial assumptions are met, and that's a big if, then there will be enough assets on hand to pay the benefits for that retiree for the remainder of his or her lifetime. Now, given the fact that you can see on the left-hand side of that graph that the level contribution line is higher than the cash benefits line, the system accumulates assets. And given the fact that the system accumulates assets, and you'll hear from Mark, those assets of the system get invested. And therefore, there are three main contributors to a public employee retirement system, including the City of Columbia Police and Fire Retirement Fund. One is employer contributions, one is member contributions, but a third extremely important revenue source for any public employee retirement system is the investment income earned on those assets. And we're going to see that the investment income can be very different in different years. We try and smooth out some of that fluctuation, and I'll talk about that a little bit. But in a pretty well-funded retirement system, investment income generally becomes about two-thirds of the revenue that finances the benefits of the system for a public employee retirement system. Next slide, James, if you don't mind. So, you know, we have been talking about this actuarial evaluation. And so, you know, really what is it? It's a mathematical process by which we try and determine that level of contribution. And given the mathematical process, things or data or items have to get used to do the mathematical computations. So one is obviously census data, information about the individuals that are covered by the system. So that includes individuals that are already in retirement status. It includes individuals that have terminated employment, haven't received a benefit yet. They're eligible at some point in the future, but they're not an active participant anymore. And we have our active participants, both the police and firefighters. So we take into account their information. For example, for an active member, how much service do they have? What's their salary? For a retiring beneficiary, what's their benefit amount each year? Are they a male or female? Because we have different life expectancies depending upon the gender of an individual. We take into account the financial information. That's the asset data. So obviously, I mentioned assets are extremely important. So James and Matthew provide us data with respect to, this is the assets of the system as of September 30th, 2022, in addition to what's happened during the year. So for example, how much contributions did we get in the year? What was the investment income during the year? What were the benefit payments that came out? So basically the income statement for the fund. We have to take into account the benefit provisions of a retirement system. So for example, given what are the retirement eligibility conditions for an active member, for a retiree that's already in payment status, what are the cost of living allowance provisions, meaning how much does their benefit increase year over year to sort of cover inflation to some extent, things of that nature. Given the fact that we're trying to quantify today in financial terms events that are going to happen next week, next year, 10 years from now, 50 years from now, and even 100 years from now, we have to make actuarial assumptions. We have to make assumptions about the future. And actuarial assumptions can be categorized into two main categories. One is economic assumptions, and the other is what we call demographic assumptions. Demographic assumptions can be thought of what happens to people. So for example, how long do we think an individual is going to live once they're in their retirement years? Given the fact that an individual is eligible to retire, what's the chance that he or she will retire? We don't say that 100% of individuals are going to retire just because they're eligible to do so. We analyze the data and we make assumptions given what we've seen in the system. What are the chances that an individual might become disabled and draw a disability benefit from the system? What are the chances that an individual may terminate employment prior to retirement and either take a refund of the employee contributions that they put into the system, or if they're eligible for a deferred benefit, take that deferred benefit? And the last and final item there is the actuarial funding method. And the actuarial funding method that's used for almost all public employee retirement systems is what's called the entry age normal placement. And it's sort of like what I talked about before. It's basically trying to compute a level contribution rate the first time the member enters the system to the time they're expected to leave the system. And if all the assumptions were met, assets will accumulate and be sufficient to pay up their benefits during their retirement years. For the City of Columbia Police and Fire Retirement System, the most important assumption in the valuation process is the investment return assumption. Because for public employee retirement systems, that's the discount rate that's used to discount benefits payable in the future back to today. And the investment return assumption for our system is 6.25%. Roughly about 10 or 12 years ago, that assumption was 7.5%. A couple of years ago, it was 7%. And given the most recent, what we call experience study, or where we review the assumptions, the board lowered that assumption to 6.25%. That trend has been happening all throughout the nation. There were plans that were maybe 10 or 15 years ago at an 8% investment return assumption, and they're now down to like 6.5% or 6%. CalPERS is an example like that. They, I think, were as high as 8. They're down to 6.8% currently. And the reason that public employee retirement systems have been lowering their investment return assumption isn't because of what's happened in the past. It's because of what the expectation is going forward. So we've worked with Mark and his crew, and we worked with James, and we analyzed some investment consultants as well. And given how the assets of the system are invested, we try and use the capital market assumptions from those investment consultants to try and make a determination of a reasonable assumption going forward of what we think the assets can earn. If you could go to the next slide, James, please. So I mentioned that we have to take into account the membership of the system, and this here is just a brief history of the active members of both the police and the fire fund. So as of September 30th, 2022, there were 153 police members in the system with valuation payroll just above $10.2 million. Their average pay was just under $66,700. The average pay increase for them was about 7.6%. And as you can see on the fire side, we had 143 members annual or valuation payroll, annual payroll about $11.2 million, average pay about $78,000. Which was an increase of about 10% year over year for the firefighters. That's what we call an actuarial loss, meaning that pays in the last year from October 1st, 2021 to September 30th, 2022 increased faster than we were anticipating given our assumptions. It's good for the member. Because they're happy they got a pay increase higher than what we were assuming. But for liability purposes, that means that their liability, since their benefits are related to their pay, are higher than we expected them to be given the prior valuation. So we call that an actuarial loss. Basically, system experience, at least on the pay side, was worse than expected. If you can go to the next slide, James, please. So this here is just a brief history of the retirees and beneficiaries on the system or in the system. So in the police fund, we have 191 individuals receiving benefits. And at the end of the day, I love talking about actuarial work. I know Mark loves talking about his investment knowledge. But at the end of the day, the reason we have this retirement system is to pay the benefits to the retirees and beneficiaries given the service that they provided the City of Columbia during their active employment. So in the police fund, we have 191 individuals drawing about $6.3 million annually. In the fire fund, we have 176 individuals with annual benefits of about $8.7 million. If we go to the next slide, please, James. So I mentioned that assets are very important and they can be very volatile. And this page really shows that statistic. So let me first draw your attention to the second row from the bottom. Last year, the fund earned 20.6% for the year ended September 30th, 2021. What the market giveth, the market can take it away. Unfortunately, this year, the market rate of return for the year ended September 30th, 2022 was minus 15.5%. And remember, our starting point's not zero. Our starting point is the investment return assumption, and this year was 6.25%. So even though those two numbers look sort of on the order on the market rate of return, that minus 15% or 15.5% is roughly about a 21% loss, because our bogey isn't zero, it's 6.25. Last year the bogey was 7, but we got 20.6 on a market value basis, so we beat it by about 13%. But given the volatility of the markets, we try and smooth out those volatilities when we use what we call the funding value of assets, which is ultimately used in determining the employer contribution. And I'm just going to talk briefly about the smoothing process. So basically, the smoothing process said something like the following. This year, we thought we were going to earn 6.25% on basically the assets at the beginning of the year. If we had earned 6.25%, we would have earned row E3, which was about $10.259 million. In reality, we earned E1, which was the minus $27.7 million. The difference between those two numbers, the minus $38 million, so row E1 minus row E3, that gets phased in over a four-year period. So we recognize 25% of that minus $38 million this year. We'll recognize 25% of it next year, and you can see the diagonal. But last year, we thought we were going to earn $10,597,000, but we actually earned just under $31 million. So the difference last year was to the good of $20.4 million. And we recognize that over a four-year period. So you can see how the smoothing process works. So even though we had a minus 15.5% return last year and a market return last year of 20.6%, on a funding value of assets basis, this year our recognized rate of return was 3.2%, and last year was 10. So we still had an investment loss this year of row F5, just under $5 million, but nothing like the minus $27 million if we were to incorporate the market value of assets each and every year perfectly. If we could go to the next slide, please. So I had mentioned that one of the main purposes of the actuarial evaluation is to determine the employer contribution rate to fund the plan. And there are two components to the employer contribution rate. One is what we call the normal cost of benefits, and that's the top portion of the table here. The normal cost of benefits, the way to think about that, is that's the cost of our active members accruing an additional year of service credit, because an additional year of service credit gives them higher benefits because their benefits are both related to their pay and their service. So for the police group this year, in charge, the normal cost was 20.42%. The members are contributing just over 4%. So the difference between those two numbers is 16.4%. which is the employer's portion of the normal cost. Now you'll see that there's two columns to the left of the column I was just referring to, because there were benefit changes or a new tier of benefits introduced back in October of 2012. So police officers, and this is the same for firefighters, police officers hired prior to October 1st, 2012 have more generous benefits than police officers hired on or after October 1st, 2012. And that's the same for the fire group. So the employer normal cost for the fire group, in total, is 38.28%. On average, members are contributing just over 10% of pay, but that's a significant difference between the two groups. The pre-October 1, 2012 firefighters, they're contributing 16.32% of pay. Post-October 1st, 2012, they're contributing 4% of pay. So on average, the group's contributing just over 10.6% of pay. The employer normal cost for the fire group is 27.64%. So that's the cost of our active members accruing an additional year of service credits. I had mentioned, and we're going to see on the next slide, we don't have enough assets on hand and currently to cover all of the liabilities that our membership has earned as of September 30th, 2022. So given that we have what we call an unfunded actual accrued liability, and sometimes people think of that like a mortgage, we amortize that over a 29-year period to try and basically pay off that debt. For the police group, that portion of the contribution rate is 30.66% of payroll. For the fire portion, it's 42.58% of payroll. Something to keep in mind there is roughly about 60 or 65% of the total employer contribution rate is actually for service that's happened in the past. And we just have not accumulated enough assets to cover the liabilities for that past service. Having said that, that's not unfortunately unique to the City of Columbia's system. There's quite a few public employee retirement systems across the country where that's a true statement. Because since 2000, the investment markets have not been particularly kind. And in addition, when you lower your investment return assumption, and I mentioned that the board has lowered it, and I think very appropriately so, from 7.5% to 7% and then to 6.25%. If you think you're going to earn less investment income going forward, then either your employer contribution rate has to go up or your member contribution rate has to go up, because those are your only three revenue sources. The total police contribution and employer contribution rate is 47.06%, and for fire, it's 70.22%. For fiscal year 2024, that's roughly about a $5.1 million employer contribution for the police group and roughly about a $7.9 million employer contribution for the fire group. Next slide, James, please, if you don't mind. Thank you. So this slide shows our actuarial accrued liabilities, so basically the liabilities associated with service accrued as of September 30th, 2022. For the police group, it's just over $122 million. We have about $62 million in assets, so that unfunded actual accrued liability is the difference between those two numbers, just under $60 million. A different way of presenting that sort of statistics is what portion of our liabilities are covered by the funding value of assets. And that's the bottom number. It's basically 51%. So roughly about half of our liabilities are covered by system assets on the police side. For the fire side, the total accrued liabilities are $196 million. Assets of about $105 million. So a difference there of $91 million, which is the unfunded. The fire funded ratio is about 53%. One thing to notice here is a significant portion of the liabilities associated with our system are individuals that are already in payment status. So for example, for the fire group, $84 million divided by the $122 million is roughly about 68%. The $130 million divided by the $196 million for the fire group is about 67%. So a very significant amount of the liabilities are associated with individuals that are already in payment status. So something that's, that should be considered. If we turn to slide 10, James, thank you. I'm just going to, given the fact that we have to make assumptions to calculate all these numbers, I know for certainty I'm going to be wrong. There is zero chance that the future will evolve exactly the way I think it's going to evolve based upon my assumptions. So what we try and convey to our clients is the risk associated with our calculations as well as potential volatility going forward. And one way I'll present that, and I'll use the fire fund as an example. So if you look at the bottom table, the ratio of the assets in the system for the fire fund divided by their payroll is 9.4. So basically, our assets are about 9.4 times higher than our fire payroll. Such that if the fire group had a 10% asset loss, and by a 10% asset loss, remember, that's not a minus 10% return. That's a minus 3.75% return because our starting point is 6.25. If that were to happen, and I'm not saying it does, but if that were to happen, that asset loss is 90% of payroll. So if you wanted to pay that asset loss, which is a very, it's not an implausible market return as we saw on the previous page, you would basically have to almost double the contribution for payroll in a particular year. Now, we don't do that. We use a amortization period, the 29 years currently, and that amortization period is going to drop year over year. But it does give an indication of the potential volatility in the employer contribution. Again, not unique to the City of Columbia Police and Fire Retirement Fund. I will say that for public safety type retirement systems, the volatility is higher. Generally speaking, you know, for example, public safety personnel retire earlier than, for example, a general type occupation. My understanding, well, it's not my understanding, I'm pretty sure, but the general group and the utility departments of the City of Columbia participate in loggers. Generally speaking, those ratios would be lower because there's later retirement eligibility for those types of occupations. So it's not something that you can fret upon or worry about, but it's something you just need to be cognizant of. If we can go to the last slide, James, please. So just to recap a little bit. So the employer contribution rate for the police group this year is 47.06% compared with the 46.29% from the prior fiscal year. And recall that one of the observations I made was we try and achieve a pretty level contribution rate, and that's pretty level. There's not much difference as a percentage of payroll. For the fire group, it actually went down a little bit year over year. 70.44% to 70.22%. But also recall that those percentages are being applied to a significantly higher payroll. So in dollar terms, employer contributions are expected to increase pretty substantially in the fiscal year in question. And with that, I would be more than happy to take any questions the council may have.
Does council have any questions for our actuary?
No. Well, I understand that last slide, at least. Yeah. Well, basically what our actuary is saying is that for every one police officer, we pay 47% or the...
Yeah,
47%. To the benefits. So you're paying almost like 1.5. And for every firefighter, you're paying... an additional 70%.
And this is because they're in this kind of separate investment rather than where our, the rest of our other employees are in.
And because they retire earlier than more traditional.
And then it's also because the amount that we have to pay out to the people that are already retired, we don't have enough assets to cover that. So we're having to increase the amount the employer contributes to the fund to cover the amount that our current retirees get based off of what they earned as their time working for the city.
Who looks at the investment, how these funds are invested? Because it seems to me like a few years ago, the city looked at that and changed the investment group, or?
We added to the investment pool. And so we have a police and fire pension board that meets quarterly, and we discuss the investments, what we're investing in, assumed rates of return, different things like that. That was not so, I would say, what, about 10, 15 years ago?
Mark, do you remember?
So it changed in 2008, and I'll cover that after.
Oh, okay.
I think he's our investment guy. I think.
Okay, sorry. I'm just.
That's a good question.
You're reading ahead.
Well, yeah. You know, I get a grasp of this, and then, you know, it's about 70 to 80%, but this is like the sixth or seventh time I've heard this, so I can't imagine if you're brand new how much we get.
I do have one question. Yeah, back on either slide 8 or 9, it doesn't matter, the unfunded actuary. Is that from the past or is that ongoing?
Oh, it's ongoing.
Okay, so every year we're
adding to it.
We're adding to that.
And okay. Sometimes you take away from it.
Right. Okay.
Which is why we're asking people to go to loggers.
Yep.
Right.
The unfunded accrued liability is the result of past experience. If we can go to slide 8, that unfunded accrued liability contribution of 30.66% and 42.58% is required if all the assumptions were met for the next 29 years. So basically, that's your mortgage time frame. If all assumptions were met, that contribution would drop off after 29 years.
So do we have a slide or a chart that shows us, you know, our tipping point? Of which the people that are on the existing system, we're no longer going to have, especially if we switch, right? Especially if we switch.
Once that is decided upon, yes, we would be able to say definitely, you know, here's your point. But right now, there's not an end in sight. So
it's just compounding?
Yes.
So if we asked or if our fire and police organizations agreed to move to loggers, we still need to make sure that we fund the current pension plan, even if we move them to loggers, because we have a financial obligation.
That's correct.
To the current folks.
But how does that work if we move members to loggers and those new members are no longer contributing as part of those three sources of income, revenue, income? I don't remember which word you used, but How do we continue to pay down this debt, essentially, if we lose one of those three sources that are contributing to the debt?
You would end up paying in more each year.
The city would.
The city
would.
Okay. Oh, and just one general question. Is this like the Missouri teachers where it's outside of Social Security, or are they also paying into Social Security in addition to their contributions?
The police pay into Social Security and fire does not.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions before we get into investments on actuary? No? All right. Thank you.
Either you can either stay on and listen or you can log off now. It's up to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mita.
Thank you, Alan. Good evening.
Thank you.
So
I'm Mark Shigosky. I'm a managing director and a senior institution consultant at UBS. I'm a bit of the history for the City of Columbia. For those of you who have never seen me talk about this before, I have three fact checkers in the room. I have Ben, who is on the board representing the citizens, Lance, and I have Ms. Messina, who knows me from a different position in the state. So I've been, I came to the city in 1977 as a graduate student at the Business and Public Administration School on a presidential fellowship. I lived here for 5 years. I've worked for and now with the City of Columbia since that time. Okay, so I can give you the history of this pension plan, okay, in numbers. Also, in terms of the city, I did the statistical package for the city in 1978. We got the first certificate of conformance, which is the award that the finance department always strives to get on the GFOA. Okay, so I have a background in that. I'm going to try to tie everything that just happened to the city, to the finance department, to the actuary, to the portfolio, because I think it's a bit confusing. The actuary, Mita is the best presenter of actuaries that I work with across the country. I represent a team that I founded that within UBS, but we go back to other firms that merged into UBS. It's multi-generational, so when we come into the meetings, we have at least two different generations and two different viewpoints coming in. So we'll go over real quickly first a market overview, and Ben and Lance have seen this a couple times, and Ben, I'm sorry we didn't update some of the slides. Okay, the first one, which I think is important, when Anita went through and said the portfolio was down last year, in 2022, I think everybody experienced not a great feeling in their stomach. So if you think about it, the most conservative investment you're supposed to have are bonds. If you look to the right on this chart, the gray line represents the worst performance of bonds in the past 50 years, and the blue line is what happened last year in 2022. So the most conservative investment you could have had in general in 2022 was down 13%. That represents the worst drawdown in 50 years. So you didn't feel good if you were in bonds. On the other side, 100% stocks, the market was down 24%, which is not a great place to be, but the worst was 51% in the past 50 years. So on a basis, stocks and bonds were somewhat behaving the same way, and if you were to 60-40, you can see what happened. This chart's a little bit old, it doesn't reflect the past 3 weeks, but where we were 3 weeks ago is you can see that even though the market has rallied 14%, 15%, we're still down from where we were in 2022. Some of the indexes are up. The other thing to keep in mind when you're looking at the markets right now is if you remember a term FANG for the market, that was Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. That was about 80% of the returns going to most of the last decade. You had to be in those stocks. This year, it's called the Magnificent Seven, okay, or ManMat, which is Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, NVIDIA, Meta, which is Facebook, Alphabet, which is Google, and Tesla. If you look at the S&P 500, which is up about 14%, about 80% of that move are those seven stocks. So if you don't feel good when you're looking at your portfolio, if you don't own those seven stocks, you're not doing real well, okay? So does that any questions we go through? It's kind of collegial. So the next slide is what did this. So this is the interest rates, and our Fed is our central bank raising rates. If you look at the red line or the burgundy, depending on what color you think it is, I'm a guy, so the colors of Microsoft is what I know. I think it's red, but I'm told it's maroon. You can see that the interest rate slope or the interest rates moved up very quickly in less than 15 months. We went from 0% interest rates to over 5% now. Now, 5% isn't a big number, but it's how quickly that happened that makes a big difference. Okay, so what caused that? I don't know if you know the term black swan event, but a black swan event sounds like it's an old term, but it was brought out by a gentleman named Table in 2007. And that explains it. What a black swan event is when there's an economic event that's not predicted, and it takes the market apart. And the first time black swan was used widely by the press was in 2008, when we had the mortgage crisis and the very deep recession or near depression in 2008. So it's supposed to happen once in a lifetime, once in a business cycle. If you look since the beginning of 2022 to now, when interest rates have moved up like this, dealing with four or five black swans at once. We have the Ukrainian-Russia incursion, We have the shutdown and the pandemic in China, which messed up the supply chains, the reopening, which isn't going according to plan. We have Korea, we have Iran at this point, we have interest rates, we have inflation, geopolitical events all over the place. So it's like multi-dimensional economics at this point. But when we look at that chart right there, if you were to continue it back going 10 years, interest rates have been near zero for the past 10 or 15 years. And that was unnatural starting in 2008. If you think about the Fed and the central banks, they forced interest rates down to zero to save the economy starting in 2008 and kept rates that low. So what that did to the economy is it did away with something called the cost of money. So if I sat here and I wanted to borrow money from everybody in this room, the first question you want to ask me is, how long do I want to borrow that money for? If I said 1 year, the interest rate would be different than for 30 years. And then you'd ask me, how much risk do I have to take on to lend you money? The more risk, the more you're going to charge me. Well, over the past 10 years, that disappeared. Okay, so the Fed kept it unnaturally low. So the concept of cost of money went away. Now the cost of money actually means something. Okay? Now it's 5% if you want to borrow money, right? On the yield curve. So think about it as the city, and I'm going to try tying this into the city finances. If you have to stockpile in the city food in the food bank, if you have to buy fire hydrants and put it in a warehouse so you have it because fire hydrants get hit a lot, okay? You were financing that through bond issues or COPS or whatever it was, and maybe 1 to 1.5%. Not a big cost of money. Now to fund that stuff is going to cost the city 3 to 5% to fund that, okay? If I owned a business and I'm manufacturing stuff and I have to stockpile it on my shelf, I was paying the same 1 to 2%, so my profit margin was only dangered, had 1 to 2% taken away. Now all of a sudden I'm paying 5 to 11%, so my profit margin disappeared. On a personal basis, if you or I went out to lease a car in the past 3 years, I'm sorry, went to lease a car for a 3-year lease 3 years ago, I would have paid $200 to $500 for that lease. Same lease today at 5%, I'm paying $400 to $1,000 for the same lease because the cost of money means something. So now we have inflation, and to put it in perspective, anybody born after 1980 has never experienced inflation. So this is brand new to those people, okay? So I'm gonna throw it in perspective. When I started this business, if you could afford a $100,000 CD, you would get 10 5/8%. You got to choose a toaster oven or a set of glasses for that CD. True? Okay? My first mortgage was 13 5/8% floating. Okay? You know what? The economy did just fine. The problem is how quickly the rates went up and the adjustment to people that never had to deal with it. And for when you're sitting on a board like this or a city council, and all of a sudden you have to adjust the way it's run. Your finance department's done a fine job of adjusting to that, and that affects the pension and everything else. Any questions on any of that so far? Okay. Next slide. So one of the things that affected the economy and the interest rates was the debt ceiling, right? So the debt ceiling has been put away for now. It's going to probably show its head another 4 or 5 months. But if you look at it, it's kind of like the pension. If you look at the debt as bonds, which are paper, right? And that paper's on fire, that's what the debt ceiling's like. It was on fire, nobody could pay for it, and the way we just put it out was to take wet paper, wrap it around that fire, and the fire goes out for a while, and then the fire will start again when that paper dries out.
This is so uplifting.
And this is what I'm doing. Yeah.
No, but it's reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to deal with it. I mean, yeah. This is what the pension's about.
That's why he does funny analogies. Just to make it
it does, it does.
All right, so the next one is the interest rates. Up until about 3 weeks ago, every firm in the world was projecting that interest rates were going to level out in June and start going down in September to December of this year. Our firm came out one of the first and said, actually, interest rates are going to stop going down, are going to stop in June, and then all of a sudden go back up in July and August and not come down until sometime in 2024. So we can look at the bond market and see that interest rates are being projected to go up at least 2 more times, higher than what everybody thought. So when you're doing the financing for the city, you have to keep that in mind. I'm being realistic, okay, as we go through this. This is what we look at in the pension and the investments. Next page. On the right-hand side, I think what's most important, well, on the left-hand side, as we went through the COVID pandemic, off of the debt load of people that everybody had peaked out in 2015, everybody's budget was dinged for about 13% of the interest you were paying on your debt, mortgage, everything else. The pandemic and the sudden drop in interest rates gave everybody the ability to refinance, uplifting 2.5% mortgages. I wish I had that when I started out, okay? So all of a sudden the debt load started going down for individuals that had more money to spend as we came out of COVID. It's starting to go up. On the other side, it shows how much money was saved, up to $2 trillion during COVID. Now we've dropped to about $1 trillion. Now for the city, something to consider is that $1 trillion is sitting basically with 40% of the U.S. population. 60% or the inverse of that are living paycheck to paycheck right now, okay? So everybody's saying recession's coming. I came from a family that didn't have a lot of money. That is the worst kind of recession you can have. You have rising interest rates and you have inflation at the same time. So that 60%, which has now dropped to about 58 or 59% because people are adjusting, that's what's dinging the economy. They're hurting, but the rest of the 40% are keeping the consumers going invisible. Next slide. Any questions on that? I'm moving pretty quickly. So basically, the other thing that the city has to be concerned with is how tight the labor market is. Okay? So we're going to go to the next page. I'll just do that on one side. So the labor market is probably the biggest problem. I now know that the city of Columbia has a 1.9% unemployment rate, which means you can't find people to work. That is not so unusual. Wages are going up. People are moving around. I sit on a nonprofit nursing home where I live, and the aides in our nursing home were making $13 an hour 2 years ago. They're making $22 an hour now, which is a big, big increase, which means everybody above them wants their income to go up also. So there's upward pressure, and I'm sure Matthew and Jim can tell you what it's costing the city to raise wages, and the city council has to watch out. So the last slide before we get into the portfolio just says the base case for the year basically is where we are in the markets right now. Selectively is probably where we're going to be in the stock market by the end of the year, unless the economy really starts to settle in, where the rents calm down. So let's go through the portfolio. Any questions on any of this? So this is what we do every year, or every time we come before the city council. Real quick breakdown, we're sitting on about 29.5% fixed income, which are bonds. Okay, those are things that pay interest. That's among the lowest levels we've had. Thanks to, and I should say this, the city is very fortunate. The board, or the pension boards, are excellent. We have two professionals that run insurance company portfolio and state retirement portfolio, so it's very vigorous. And the police and the fire over the years have gotten educated on their own, or hopefully some from us, and there are always vigorous conversations as to what's going on in the portfolio. So you have a very knowledgeable police and fire pension board, both the citizens and the members themselves. So we have the fixed income. We just went into alternative investments for the first time. It's been a bit of a struggle with the legal department. We're getting contracts approved, each one of them. But that's currently at about 4.5%. That's a small part, which is reflective of the bonds. That's where the money comes from. So we're about 34-35% between those two. Then we have about 41.5% in large cap, 15.4% in the small cap space, and the remainder, 15.8% in international. We as a group have always been underweight what everybody else has in international. It should have been at 1.30%. But our argument is we the S&P 500, more than 50% of the income from that index comes from overseas already. And the hedging of the dollar is already taken care of. So we tend to underweight international. Any questions on that?
What would be an example of an alternative investment?
A real estate company.
Okay.
Okay. What it does is puts a little bit of illiquidity into the portfolio. And you saw we're underfunded. We're at 51%, which means 49% is what the city owes into that pension. We want to make sure we have liquidity. So we use the example, I'll use a big university has a big foundation, okay, an endowment. The difference is in 2008, when everything froze, the city needed money and this was all liquid, we couldn't get to the money. If we're a foundation or endowment, they have benefactors that are constantly putting money in, so they shut down all capital projects, all expenditures, and they take the money from the other people coming in. So we have to be very careful with putting this. Can I answer? So the next page, and this will complete it, and I'll give you some of the history. I'll see if I can answer the question you had. So you can see what the portfolio is made up of. We have a real estate and the alternatives at the bottom to your question. We have a distressed debt, and you figure the economy's kind of running into problems. So we have a specialty firm that's in there doing nothing but looking for bad debt that they can make work really well. They've done a great job. And we've Blackstone Real Estate Income Trust. They own virtually no inner city properties and no malls or strip malls. It's mostly houses and things like that, okay, and outside of the inner cities. And they've done well for us at this point. But I think the most important line on here is going to be in the middle where you see all these numbers, okay? So if you look back, side, so the portion says net contributions, all right? You can see it's negative numbers going back 5 years. The city should be proud. It started with 29, and I'm sorry, we started working with the city in 2008. Previous to 2008, the portfolio was managed in-house by one individual. We were 50% stocks and 50% money market, okay? So during the good times, you didn't make money, right?
That's one of the issues that I have with this whole thing. You should have been getting 15%, 10-15% during that time, and we were making like 4%.
We reconstructed when we took on the assignment. We reconstructed the data back to 2000 because that's where the day we could get the best data. After that, we couldn't get the data that would justify. Okay, so the data now belongs to the city. If something happens to us, the service that we use is a contract with the city, so this information will always be there now. Of course, it is a statistical package, so I dug through the files in the bottom of the old 601 East Broadway through the papers to get to the stuff, but you don't have to ever do that again through computers or anything. Okay, so there are two things. Just from 2008, the portfolio was kind of just sitting. Okay, the other thing, a decision that was made by the city council in the 1990s was not to put any contributions into the portfolio. Okay? All right? So there hasn't been contributions into this portfolio. We've been working with the city since 2008. There's been one contribution the city could afford of $1 million. Okay?
Now I'm lost. So we're not putting any, the city's not putting money into
the city is putting money in every single year. That's what I want to uncover so you understand that. This is a closed investment pool, okay? If you look at it, money is coming out of here every year. The city has an obligation and the people that are working to put money into the portfolio every single year. But if you think about what Mita did, is you have more retirees than working people, okay? And you're 47 to 49% short on the payments. So the $12 or $13 million that the city has put in last year never hits this portfolio. It goes directly to pay the benefits. Does that answer your question now? So negative cash flow. So we've been able to keep this portfolio growing in spite of the fact that there's money coming out every year, in spite of the fact that the city's putting so much money in. And Matthew goes through what he's saying before, that it's a game that has a bell curve of, you know, more people retiring. That number's only going to get bigger, and the draw on this is going to get bigger. But again, no money ever hits this investment.
Does any money come out of that investment?
Well, yes, and that's what that line is.
Yeah.
Which year
line?
Fiscal year to date, we pulled out $500,000.
Fiscal year to date.
Okay, in total, in the past 3 years, we pulled out $5 million. Okay, prior to that, the city wasn't paying $12 million a year, may have been paying $5 or $6 million, if you guys can correct me. So the draw on it was a lot less on a 5-year average. And that's just accelerating. Does that answer your question? Where's the money?
Mm-hmm. I have no idea. I have no idea if that answers my question or not. I think I understand what you're saying. And there's too many lines up there for me to be able to follow.
The pool of money we keep, the city and the employees contribute every paycheck, never goes into this portfolio. It simply goes to cover the other retirees.
So basically, the pension is living paycheck to paycheck.
Sure. Yeah, it's a little worse than that, because even on top of that, we have to take money out of this pool to cover the short goals.
So paycheck to paycheck and dip into savings.
Yes,
just in the household budget.
Yeah, you probably got a title loan in that.
Yeah. Trying to lift the veil back on this. We did this the last time, but I think we had a better
your next slide, the optimistic one. There are no optimistic slides.
I think think it's optimistic if you have a chance to fix the problem.
Well, I mean, like, those numbers are going up, so we're getting some return now that you fixed the problem. It just obviously is taking a while to get a positive number.
Yeah.
And I think if there are more people that retire, I mean, this, I think it needs a bigger fix than.
Right. Well, yeah.
I guess the other thing I'm going to have to correct it is one of the things is the cost of managing this portfolio, your rate of being charged is pretty much like $1 billion portfolio. It's a big book of business, so we're negotiating. It's not 0.32, it's actually 0.41 because you added your time investments. The number on the bottom right is wrong. And in 21, it was 0.39. So it's very low in terms of managing portfolio. I think Ben talked about this.
What would it normally be?
Like 60, 70 basis points. So 30.130 or more.
Okay.
It's cost savings.
Good to know.
Any other questions or?
You have six slides of risk. Disclosure.
That's longer than the entire presentation.
I noticed that.
When I started this business, just like the city, the compliance department was at the back of the bus, and they're in the tow truck, and they're pulling some around.
Are there any questions for staff or Mark on this?
Yeah, what recommendations do you have to improve this situation?
What are our takeaways here?
We will talk about that in future meetings, but this was just to give you all a picture of what is going on behind the scenes. We do have some ideas, but I don't think we're ready to talk about those.
Okay.
Yeah, when might you be ready to talk about those? When might this come?
What's
back?
The tipping point?
Once we get a little further with the talks about moving the loggers, I think that's when we'll start up those conversations on how you would fund this up.
Okay. So then probably our budget.
Yes.
That was depressing but informative.
Thank you for providing levity. Any other council questions for staff? No, thank you. Thank you so much for coming in and a little bit of a history lesson as well.
That's super interesting.
We now have other items that council wishes to discuss. Is there anything that council? One thing is that Planning and Zoning Commission have requested to do a joint work session with council on short-term rentals for an off time, potentially before they do then their next kind of public hearing or public meetings once the university school system starts up again. And I want you guys to look at your dates and look to me if August 14th is available. It's an off Monday for us after our first budget introduction public hearing at the 7th meeting, and it's like the next Monday. Are you guys around and available?
That works for me. That
works.
I know that date.
Okay.
I'll be away.
You'll be away?
I'll be away.
You'll be away.
But I'm happy to share with you guys. I mean, it's hard to get all of us the same room in the sun.
We might do, because we're looking at both room availabilities as well as the others, but Don, are you away or here?
No, I think I can make August 14th work. Are you talking about an evening session like this or day
session?
It would session?
Be kind of a 5:30 or something sort of time.
Yeah,
I think
I can make that work.
The other one is potentially, I mean, if we wanted to, so we have our first budget hearing August 7th, and we could always look at the next day, the 8th. August 8th as well, a Tuesday.
August 8th.
You're going to be Tuesday, not good?
I teach, but I can try to.
Okay.
Yeah, if it's in the evening, I could do that.
Yeah.
You'll be here on the 8th? You'll be here on the, Andrew, will you be around on the 8th?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll look at, we'll confirm on whether or not that's a potential, but potentially August 8th, Sheila. And obviously with the planning and zoning staff, who apparently are just skeletons.
Can
Bones
I,
crew?
Can I say this now? My first, that's Noah's birthday.
Oh, no,
I,
we're not,
my, not
doing August
preference.
8th. No, we're going to do a doodle poll.
Okay.
Sorry, that's her daughter's birthday.
I would prefer not to miss
Nope,
that.
We're doing a different thing. We'll look at some other times. And I know you're gone the first part of July. I'm gone the last part of July. But hopefully before the school session starts. So we might look for an off Monday date and pull the group.
Okay.
and see what's available. Sheila's laughing. Yeah, she is cackling. This is what she does to me. Okay, we'll pull some other dates. That was the main thing that I needed, right, Sheila, for things to do? Okay, we will continue to look at that. Anything else for the good of the cause? All right, I'll adjourn at 6:44, our pre-council. Thank you all.